Today's shir is Masechta Baba Basra Daf Kuf Mem Vav. We will begin on Daf Kuf Mem Hei Amud Beis. It's about 15-20 lines from the bottom. Tana Rabbanan, Osin Nechosin. So as the Yavetz explains, the Gemara we're about to begin, very nice Gemara, piece of Agadah to Gemara, discusses different categories, different types of Talmidei Chachamim, and the Yavetz explains what is this connection with the sugya that we've been learning. So the Yavetz explains that the first Talmud Chacham that the Mishnah, that the Gemara is going to identify as a prominent Talmud Chacham, somebody that everybody knows that he's a Talmud Chacham. And since that we learned at the end of the previous year when we were finishing the sugya of Shushbinus, that Gemara taught us that if somebody got married publicly, Bapumbi, the Gemara used the word. So then the next person also has to get married, Bapumbi, that he should claim that he should get his Shushbinus back. So Gemara speaks about Pumbi. So as the Mefarshim introduce our Sugya, the Gemara is going to mention different types of Talmidei Chachamim. One reason the Gemara is mentioning these different types of Talmidei Chachamim, as we're going to see, different types of Talmidei Chachamim are based on the different types of learning that they specialize and concentrate on. The Gemara is teaching us that one is supposed to learn all type, all halakim, all the different sections of Talmud Torah, one pshat. Another pshat is that the Gemara is going in some sort of order, and that the Gemara is teaching us the different types of Talmidei Chacham there are. One explanation is based on prominence, that the Gemara is teaching us what is the most type of prominent Talmud Chacham, and then works its way down. On the other hand, most Mefarshim, most Rishonim actually, seem to learn that the Gemara is trying to teach us that even though the first Talmud Chacham that's identified in the Gemara that we're going to learn in a moment is the most prominent Talmud Chacham, that he isn't considered the most Chashva Talmud Chacham as far as the Torah perspective is concerned. And teaching us that the Torah perspective is not based on prominence, and the Torah perspective of who is somebody special is not really based on publicity. So says the Gemara, Osa Nechosim, Osa Pombi, who is a Talmud Chacham that's considered that he has a lot of Nechosim, that he has a lot of property, that he's a prominent Talmud Chacham, Zehu Bala Godes. Somebody who's an expert in Agadah and Drush, because everybody enjoys a good Drusha. Everybody can understand a good Drusha. You don't have to be a Talmud Chacham to understand that type of drasha, so people enjoy attending that type of a shir, and that's why he's the most popular type of Talmud Chacham. Asa Sloim, somebody who's considered Talmud Chacham that has coins, and as Mefarshim explained, real estate, everybody knows I own this piece of land, I own this building, I own this property. Coins are kept in the bank, coins are kept in my wallet, so it's not that well known and seen. And if, or he's like an Asa Tekoya, he owns oil. Again, oil is in the olive. You don't see that oil. That's a Baal Pilpul. It's somebody who's a Baal Pilpul. It's a Lamdan. So it's very enjoyable. But not everybody can understand Lamdas. And it's also a subject matter that's only relevant as that Sugya, that you have the Lamdas, where you have the Lamdas background applies. So it's not as popular, and he's the next category. Asa Meshoach, somebody who's wealthy, that owns things that are measured. Asa Kamas, somebody who owns things that are hidden. This is even more hidden. Zabal Shmus, that's somebody who knows a lot of learning, has a very intense background in all areas of halacha, but his knowledge base is only relevant as the question that comes up needs to be answered. But if my knowledge on a certain subject is not relevant to someone else, he'll never have a question, or he rarely has a question regarding that subject, my knowledge base doesn't really mean much to him. And that's the Baal Shmus. Says the Gemara, Hakot Tzrichon Lamari Chetya, everybody needs somebody who has a storehouse of wheat. That means Gemara. And the Machlokes and the Mefarshim, how to understand this Gemara. Some Mefarshim explain that this is actually a continuation of describing the Talmud Chacham we just discussed. The Talmud Chacham was a Baal Shmuas. The Talmud Chacham, who has this vast knowledge base, is like somebody who has a storehouse of wheat, wheat being obviously the most staple food ingredient. And that person is in that very important category, even though it may not be appreciated as much as it ought to be. Other Mefarshim say that the Gemara actually is introducing a new Madrega. Somebody who's a Baal Gemara, somebody who understands Shas, Paiskim, who has a good understanding, that is the highest level. Hakatzrich Lamar Chetya means somebody's Gemara. But as the Mefarshim point out, and the Prima Godim, and other Paiskim use this Gemara as a raya to that concept, to that where we need to judge who is considered a more significant Talmud Chacham. It seems, based on learning our Gemara, that somebody who's a Mari Chitya, somebody who's a Baal Shmuas, somebody who has a vast knowledge base, is considered the highest level of Talmud Chacham. And the question comes up, if you have two Talmud Chachamim, one is a bigger Sinai, he has more Bekiyas, he has more knowledge, and one is a bigger Lamdan, known as an Oikar Horim. So it seems that our Gemara considers, and the Halacha considers, says the Prima Godim, the one with the bigger knowledge base to be considered the bigger Talmud Chacham. However, there's an interesting tshuva from the Shaul Meshif, who suggests that perhaps that was in the times of Chazal, where Torah wasn't recorded, or even if it was recorded, Svarim were not as accessible as they are today. But now that Svarim and knowledge is so accessible, so somebody having a very large knowledge base is not so special, because you could always access that knowledge even if you don't have it. So maybe today, being a oikahar and being a charif, a lamdan, is more important. Continues the Gemara. Amram zer amar rav. Ma'idik siv, there's a pasuk in Mishlei. Kol yimei oni royim, v'l'toiv leiv mishnah tomid. And as the Mefarshim explained, there are two difficulties with that pasuk. Shlomo Melech, which he does commonly in Mishlei, contrasts different extremes. But if the pasuk says, kol yimei oni, speaks about a poor person, so what's the contrast of a poor person? A wealthy person. But that's not what the pasuk says. Kol yimei oni royim, v'toiv leiv. The contrast is a toiv leiv. So what's the contrast between a toiv leiv and an oni? It's one question that the Gemara is trying to address. Another question is, what is the word kol, all of the days? It's a very strong expression, kol, always. And that's what the Gemara is coming to address. It says the Gemara, Amar Rav Zeira, Amar Rav, Ma'idik Siv kol yimei oni royim, zel bal Gemara. Toiv leiv mishnah tamid zel bal mishnah. Rava amar ipcha. Rava says just the opposite. It's the bal mishnah who has kol yimei oni royim, and it's the bal gemara that's toiv leiv mishnah tamid. And I saw two pshatim in the mefarshim how to understand this gemara. Actually, three pshatim. One pshat is that about somebody who learns mishnayis has an advantage and a disadvantage, as does someone who learns gemara. Someone learns Mishnah has the advantage, it's easy to learn Mishnah. It's not that hard to understand a Mishnah. A Gemara, you have to work on understanding. On the other hand, as we know, you can't pass in a Shaila based on a Mishnah. But you can come to a Maskana based on a Gemara. So each one of them has an advantage and a disadvantage. And that, those are the two sides of that, those are the two perspectives that the Gemara is addressing. Masha has a different explanation. Mashah says as follows. Sometimes ignorance is bliss, and sometimes ignorance is terrible. What do I mean? He says as follows. Let's use Hilchos Shabbos as an example. If someone has a very weak knowledge of Hilchos Shabbos, he won't be nervous if he's Mechal Shabbos, because he doesn't even realize that some of the things that he's doing are real shilas. On the other hand, he's going to be Mechal Shabbos, which is terrible. The person who has a knowledge of Hilchos Shabbos, for example, is less likely, Baruch Hashem, to be Mechal Shabbos. On the other hand, since he knows that there are so many questions that could come up on Shabbos, he's going to be constantly nervous, is what I am doing permitted or not permitted. So there again, two perspectives. The Baal Mishnah is a person that doesn't have a lot of knowledge, so he won't be nervous, but he will be Mechal Shabbos. The Baal Gemara has a lot of knowledge, so he's less likely to be Mechal Shabbos, but he's more likely to be nervous. Another pshat, very cute pshat, that actually is relevant, Laloch L'maisa, is as follows. A Baal Mishnah, so it's easy to learn Mishnayos. So he's finishing Mesechtes and Sedarim on a regular basis. So he could always make a Siyum. Because he's always, and therefore he always is attending parties. He's making Siyumim. To learn Gemara is much more complicated. You have to finish a whole Mesechta till you finish Mesechta Babasra and you make a Siyum. It's a lot of hard work. And in fact, the Mefarshim indicate that the last Halacha in Aruch Chaim is the question in a leap year. So we have two adders, and the Shulchan Aruch speaks about what should you do on Purim Katan, on your Dalet Adar Rishon. And the Shulchan Aruch suggests that you should make a Suda, you should be Marba B'Suda, you should make some extra Suda even on Purim Katan. And Drama, and these are the last words that he ends Shulchan Aruch Aruch Chaim with, is the words Toiv Lev Mishta Tamid. What's the Ramah trying to teach us? Say the Mefarshim. There are people that don't eat, that don't attend the Suda unless it's a Suda Smitzvah. So now the question that comes up is the Suda on Purim Katan a Suda Smitzvah or not? Says the Ramah, Toiv Lev Mishta Tamid. What are we saying, Toiv Lev Mishta Tamid? Make a Siyim. A Siyim is certainly a Suda Smitzvah, and then you won't have a question what you should do on Purim Katan. Interesting, the Shach of Chuvas Pnei Maven actually discusses, let's say it's Erev Pesach or the 9 days, can a seam be made on Mishnayis? It's much easier to learn Mishnayis. Can you make is a seam on Mishnayis considered a seam that should be considered a Sudas Mitzvah? He paskins that a Mesechta itself, a Mesechta Mishnayis itself, is not enough to be considered a seam which is a Sudas Mitzvah. You have to learn at least the whole Seder. And that Seder can't just be learning the Mishnayis. You have to learn with Mefarshim that should have some sort of a category like Gemara, that you understand it better, and then it can be considered a Siyum. V'hanadamar m'sharshia m'shmei d'rova ma'idiksiv ma'siyah avonim yotze behem b'kei etzim yisokim behem. Ma'siyah avonim, somebody who works with stones, Yotzeben will be sad. Eilu bali mishnah. But kei eitzim, but somebody breaks wood, Yisokbem will be warmed by the heat of those woods. Eilu bali gemara. And the Mashal explains this gemara based on his explanation that we just said a moment ago. He says there are really two, probably more than two, but he points out two advantages in learning Torah. One is the Torah is an antidote to the Yetzirah. And the other thing is by learning Torah you know what to do. So it says, somebody learns Mishnayis, he's a Messiah Avonim, he breaks the stone, he breaks the Yetzirah. Somebody besides learning Mishnayis and having that Madrega, he's able to overcome the Yetzirah, also is successful at learning Gemara, he accomplishes even more, he knows what to do, it's like warm, it's much warmer. Rav Chanin Amar, a different explanation is possible. Kaimei ani roim says sheishle isha roi has a beard wife. Taivlei mishter tamid says sheishle isha taiva. I saw two pshat. One pshat is you're always married to your wife. So somebody has a beard wife, he's always in trouble. Another pshat is somebody whose wife is a good wife, she helps him grow in Yerushimayim. Somebody whose wife is not a good wife is just the opposite. Kaimei, somebody has isha roi, he's like an ani. He doesn't grow in Yerushimayim. Somebody has a good wife is able to grow in ruchnius. Rav Yani Amar, Koyme ani roim ve'istanis. A finicky person never enjoys. So he's finicky. V'tayvelei mishter tamid, seshetata yofa, he's not that particular. Rav Yachram and Koyen me roim, zerachman. Somebody who always feels bad, so there's always tzaras in the world. And every time I hear tzaras in the world, it breaks me, so that's Koyme ani roim. V'tayvelei mishter tamid, zech sorry. Somebody who's mean doesn't bother him. Hard to say. Somebody who's short-tempered, so he gets angry all the time. Somebody's more tolerant, so not everything bothers him. How could the pasuk use the words kol always? And as Mefarshim say, we learned this many times, they used to have charity funds to give poor people food for Shabbos and Yontif. So Shabbos and Yontif, they're not working, and they're getting food. So what's bad about Shabbos and Yontif? Answers the Gemara, even on Shabbos and Yontif, when the Baruch Hashem getting good food, they don't enjoy it. When does a person get ill? Because he changes the routine. So this poor person all week, he's working hard, not eating well. So even on Shabbos, when Baruch Hashem, he gets a good meal, it just causes him trouble because he's not used to eating that way. So I saw two very nice pshatim on this, based on this Gemara of Shini Veset, Tchilas Chayli. Famous Gemara, I believe it's Masechta Beya. Machloikis Besham Beisil. How one is supposed to act all week long. Besham, I would buy an animal. So I'm putting it away for Shabbos. Found a nicer one. Said, I'll take that one. I'll eat it. And I'll take the nicer one for Shabbos. And that's how he ate all week. Beisil said, Baruch Hashem Yoyim Yoyim. We'll worry about Shabbos for Shabbos. So according to Beshamai, all week he was eating meat. Because he kept on buying animals and then eating them. So when Shabbos comes, he's already accustomed to eating meat for all week long. So that's why he has it much better. According to Beisil, he didn't eat meat all along. So even when he eats meat on Shabbos, Shinevesit, he's not used to it, he doesn't enjoy it. Another pshat I saw, the Magen Avraham, says at the beginning of Hilchos Shabbos, that there's a minig, that a Friday afternoon, somebody should eat, should taste from the Shabbos food. Actually, there's a remez for it in the Zmiris. Tameh Chaim Zachu. If somebody's toyim from the Machol Shabbos, Chaim Zachu. He's going to have a Riches Yomim. The first say, why is it so important to eat on Friday Cholent? So it's based on this Gemara. Because our Gemara says that if you eat different food, you're going to get sick. So if somebody eats on Shabbos, the Shabbos to Gemachalim, and he isn't used to it, it's only going to cause him problems. That's not what we want Shabbos Machalim to do. So we already start eating the Shabbos Machalim on Friday, so you become accustomed to those foods, and that's why when it comes to Shabbos, you're fine. Ben Sira Omer, Ksib Sefer Ben Sira. It says in the Sefer Ben Sira, we know it's a Sefer of Chochma. Koymei Ani Royim, Ben Sira Omer, Aflelis. Even at night, his life is difficult. Why? Bishvar Gagim Gagoy. Since he's poor, he can't afford to build a tall house. So he builds a low house, and therefore Mimtar Gagim Lagagoy. What happens like this? The poor person has a lower house. The wealthy person who's his neighbor has a tall house. So when it rains, all the rain from the tall house falls on the low house and it's dripping on his head all night. He can't sleep. Beroim Harim Karmoy, Ma'afra Karmel Kramim, which means as follows. Again, because he's poor, he can't afford to buy a field lower on the mountain because that's more expensive real estate. You don't have to climb to the top of the mountain. He could only afford to buy a field on the top of the mountain. He buys a field at the top of the mountain, and then he goes and works on the field. He brings topsoil, he brings fertilizer, and then the wind comes. And what does the wind do? It blows all of his fertilizer and soil to the fields on the bottom of the mountain, and all of his investment goes to others. Says the Mishnah. Ashayach Simblinus Lebeis Chamav. Simblinus were gifts, we discussed it yesterday, that typically a chosin in the time of Chazal means an orus, would send to his kala, to his arusa. Why they called Sevlinus? Sevlinus is from the word sevel, to carry. They would carry these gifts. So says the Mishnah, Hashleilach Sevlinus lebeis chama, if somebody sends gifts to his kala's house, Shalach sham meimona. Even if he sent a gift that's very expensive. But he ate in the kala's house, a feel of a dinner, even though the meal he ate was only worth a dinner, and in the if the marriage is not consummated to Nisuan, he has no right to ask back for those gifts. We'll discuss this more in the Gemara. However, the Mefarshim point out that when the Mishnah says that if you ate a meal, you have no right to ask back for your gifts. It's not just that you came, that the chosin came to the kala's house, the orus came to the arusa's house and ate a meal. The meal that was eaten had to be connected to the marriage. It had to be a meal rejoicing, a vort or a tenoyim, an engagement party. Just because you ate in this person's house a meal because you were hungry and they invited you, that isn't the meal, the Or Sameach says this, that the Mishnah is referring to. Furthermore, the Rishonim debate if the meal has to be eaten at the same time that the gifts are delivered, or if one has nothing to do with the other. The meal is the meal, and the gifts are the gifts. Some Rishonim say that the meal and the gift travel together. Some say they don't. I saw a very interesting distinction. We're going to learn in the Gemara that sometimes the chassan himself doesn't eat the meal. A shliach of the chassan eats the meal. And there's a nafkamina and halacha between if it's the chassan who's eating the meal or his shliach is eating the meal. The chassan, it makes no difference if it's at the time of the erison or any other time. The shliach, for it to be considered such a meal, it has to be at the time of the erison. Continues the Mishnah. Shalach Savlonis Merubin Shiachsimai Lebeis Bala. If he sent a lot of gifts, and according to many Rishonim, doesn't mean necessarily Savlonis Merubim. The Mishnah just uses the example of Savlonis Merubim, because the Mishnah is teaching us that if the Chosin clearly stipulated that if Chas V'Shalom, this marriage, this Erison isn't consummated to Nesuin, that I want my gifts back, so when will somebody make that type of stipulation? When he sent a lot of gifts, so he doesn't want that the gifts should stay there if they're not getting married. If it's not a lot of gifts, he doesn't care. Other Rishonim say that the Mishnah says Merubin has to be Merubin. Hareli Nigman. If he stipulated, then he always could get it back. Savlonis Me'otim Shishtam Shem Be'ez Aviyah. If he said that she could keep it, even if it doesn't get consummated in Nigman. So just to summarize, there are three categories. If he stipulated that he's going to get it back, he's entitled to get it back. If he stipulated that she could keep it, she keeps it. If he didn't say anything, it depends if he ate a meal at the Kala's house or not. Amarava. Dafka, the Mishnah says, what is considered a meal? They ate a meal that's worth a dinner. Aval pachs medinner. If the meal is worth less than a dinner, loy. Then he's not entitled. Then the gifts come back. Ask the Gemara, what's Rava teaching us? Pshita, dinner tanan. The Mishnah is very explicit that the meal has to be worth a dinner. Answers the Gemara, ma the time hu adin afil pachs medinner. The din is the same with a dinner or less than a dinner. V'hai the tani dinner. Why did the Mishnah use the case of a dinner? Usually you're not going to serve a chassid a meal that isn't even worth a dinner. Kamash Malan, that no, specifically a dinner. Less than a dinner, the halacha changes. Ask the Gemara, Ochel Tanan. The Mishnah speaks about eating a meal. Shasamai. What would be the din if he didn't eat, but he drank? Next question. Hutanan. The Mishnah speaks about the orus eating. Shluchamai. What would be the din if it's not the chassan himself eating, but it's his shliach eating? Shomtanan. The Mishnah speaks about the chassan eating the meal in the kala's house. Shogoloimai. What would be the halacha if the kala sent a chassan the meal? Toshma. Damar Yehuda Mishmu. Masiba Odomechet Shogol Beis Chomov Mei Krona Shokadi Yain Shokadi Shemen. He sent to his father-in-law's house 100 barrels of wine and oil. Vishle klei kesev, vishle klei zov, silver, gold, vishle klei millet, expensive wool, v'rochev b'simchasoy, and he was riding on a horse and rejoicing, v'holach v'amal al pesach beis chamav, and he was by the doorway of his father-in-law's home, v'tziyu koshel chamim, and they brought out a warm cup of wine, v'shasa, and he drank mace, and then he passed away. Terrible tragedy. And the question now is his estate entitled to reclaim those gifts or not? V'zu alocha heller of Achas Sarabir l'fnei Chachamim. This question was brought up in Usha, Vamru, and they paskind. Sivloinis has suin libolois, gifts that are depletable, ein nigvin, like wine, oil. V'sh'ein has suin libolois, but gifts that are depletable, that are not depletable, silver and gold, nigvin. They have a right to collect back. Shmamina. So by learning this Gemara, we see that afilu shasa, that even just drinking accomplishes that he should not be entitled to depletable gifts to be returned to him, because all he did there was drinking. Furthermore, it seems that Shmamina, that this din applies a philopoxma dinner, even if he drank something that's not worth a dinner. So all he did was drank a cup of chamim, a cup of wine. It's not worth of warm wine, which is not worth a dinner. Amar Vashi, that raya is not conclusive. Man leimelon, for who is that to tell us to loisachakle maginasa, that perhaps they ground up a jewel, the shafa alfizuzi, that's worth 1,000 zuz, vashke. So to say that that cup of wine wasn't worth a dinner, we can't say. Shamina, but we do maybe have a raya suggest the Gemara, a fila shagurloi, because the Gemara says that he drank the wine outside of his father-in-law's home. So from here we see that you don't have to necessarily eat or drink in the father-in-law's home, that should be considered that you drank, that you ate or drank from your father-in-law. So that raya is also not a raya. Because Dilma, perhaps, kol pesach beis chamav, by standing at the doorway of your father-in-law's home, beis chamav dumit is if you were in his actual home. Continues the Gemara. Ibarilhu, ma'ashi yishalish. We just said that the meal has to be a dinner. So the Gemara's question, according to the explanation of most Rishonim, is what will be the din if you ate a half a dinner? Do we prorate? So if you ate a half a dinner, she keeps half the gifts. Or is the halacha, if you didn't eat a dinner, you're entitled to get your gifts back. One question. Shach sevloinis mahu. And as the Rishonim explained the Gemara, it will become clearer as we learn the next word of the Gemara. Certainly, if the gift is here, if the gift is here, and it's a case where the kala has to return the gift to the chassan, so if the gift went up in value, so you give it back, and it went up in value. The price of gold, the price of silver went up, so he'll get something back that's worth more. The Gemara's question, I saw two examples of what the Gemara's asking. Let's say the chassan gave the kala an animal, and the animal had a baby. And now she has to give back the animal. Does she also have to give back the baby? One example. Another example is, let's say the chassan gave the kala a gift, and she sold the gift. And now she has to return. Does she have to give it back to him at the value that it was when he gave it to her? Or does she have to give him back the current value? Shlach savlon smau. Kiven, do we say, kiven the isnul of the day, hadri, if it's here, we give it back to him as it is. Therefore, b'shusay shavach, and he gets the profit. She only has to give back what it was worth when he gave it to her. Take. The Gemara remains with a question. Ask the Gemara. In the previous case, the Gemara drew a distinction. In the previous Gemara, the Gemara drew a distinction between depletable gifts and non-depletable gifts. That depletable gifts, you don't have to give back. Like food is the best example. Non-depletable food gifts have to be given back. Ask the Gemara, boy Rava, Sivlinus has suinly bolus. You gave a gift that is depletable. You gave food. However, Vilay Bolo, they didn't, do you still have the gift? The Chassan decided very soon after the engagement to break it, after they decided to break it. Mahu, what's the halacha? Toshma, Vizu halacha hella Rav Achasar Abiril Lefnei Chacham B'Yusha. If they're depletable, they're not collected. But if they're not depletable, nigvin. My love, isn't the Braisa teaching us that Afgav Deloy Balu, even though they didn't actually deplete, but since they are depletable, he has no right to ask for them. So there's no right in that Braisa. Like, perhaps the Braisa is not only speaking about that they are depletable, but the Balu. They're depletable and depleted. But what the halacha would be if they are depletable but didn't actually deplete, we do not know. So Gemara tries a different raya. Toshma. Sivlanis ma'otim, shetishtamish behen. Vehibe beisavia. If he gave her a small amount of gift that she could use while she's by her parents' home, Mishnah spoke about this at the end of the Mishnah, ein nigvin. He can't collect. So we see that it makes no difference if it depleted or not. So Because the Gemara, again, Tergumarava, B'yayvus Ibatchat. The Mishnah is referring to hairnet, to pins, that are very insignificant. So that she could keep. But maybe if it's significant, even though it's depletable, but they didn't actually deplete, we don't know what the halacha would be. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Yehuda Merav, Mas v'adam echad shagal beis chamav yayin chadosh. There was somebody who sent his father-in-law wine, the shem chadosh and oil, the kli pishtin chadosh and new linen garments, batzeris, on shavuos. That's what he sent to his caller as a gift. Asked the Ramai Kamashman, well, what's the point of the story? Ibai seima, shavuos Eretz Yisrael Kamashman. The Mishnah is teaching us Eretz Yisrael, that in Eretz Yisrael, by shavuos, you already could have wine and oil, even though it's so early in the season. Because Eretz Yisrael ripens and its fruits are available early in the season. Vibai seima, another way of understanding what the Bryce is teaching us, is the ton tanosei tana. Now let's say somebody will say there's a dentira between the Oros and the Arusa. And the Oros says, these are the gifts that I gave you that I'm entitled to get back. And she says, you couldn't have given me these gifts. These things aren't available in Shavuos. Yain Chadosh, Shem Chadosh, says the Braisa that his claim is believed, and she can't say it's not plausible to have happened. And Eretz Yisrael, it's possible that you should have new wine and new oil already on Shavuos. Says the Gemara, Amar Yehuda Merav, Mas Badam Echad, there's two ways of learning this Gemara. The Rashbam has two Pshatim. We'll learn both Pshatim, they're both very relevant. Mas Badam Echad Shamar Lai Ishta Tetronasi. There was a situation where a man was told that his wife is missing the sense of smell. And therefore, she's a balas mum. So as the Rishonim point out, even though usually the way of determining if something is a mum or not is we use a kohen as the model, and if it's considered a mum, that the kohen is considered bal mum and can't do the avodah, it's considered a mum. And if it's not considered a mum by kohen, it's not considered a mum here either. Regarding a wife, there's two ways of learning. One way is that the husband explicitly said that if my wife has this problem that she can't smell, then it's a situation that I can't tolerate. Or another pshat, which many mefarshim suggest is as follows. A kohen not having a sense of smell doesn't really make that much of a difference. A wife not having a sense of smell is a real problem. Because to be able to cook well, you have to have a good sense of smell. So if a wife is supposed to cook for a family, and if she can't smell properly, she can't be a good cook. And therefore, it's a real mum. So now he wanted to investigate, is this true or not? So how do you do the test? He followed her into a churva to check her. And he said to her, Amalei, reich tznoin ani merich begolol. I smell radishes here. He wanted to see how she reacts. Amalei, minyav lei miksoivis tirichai. So again, a number of pshatim. One pshat is, they typically ate radishes with figs. So he spoke about radishes and she spoke about figs. Another pshat is that she taka didn't know. She didn't smell the radish. And she taka had the problem. But whatever pshat we learn, we see that there's a problem here in this marriage. So she responded, right after this, the churva collapsed and she passed away. And here the two pshatim that I mentioned earlier come to play. The Rashbam has two pshatim. One pshat is that the halacha is by an arusa, if somebody is misyachid, if somebody secludes himself with his arusa, we assume that they had relations and she became his nesua. So the question now is, when she died, did she die as an arusa or did she die as a nesua? Because it's relevant regarding collecting Yerusha. It's relevant regarding the ksuba payment. So the Gemara says that even though normally, as I said a second ago, if an Oros and Arusa seclude themselves, we assume that they had relations and she is now his Nesua. Here we don't make that assumption. Because he only took her in to check what her status is. So certainly he wasn't ready necessarily to make her into her nesua, his nesua, and therefore she won't be considered his nesua. That's one pshat in the Rashbam. Another pshat in the Rashbam, interesting pshat, is that they already had nesua in this couple. And then he was made aware of this possible problem with his wife. And therefore, since he was made aware of this possible problem, and indeed it turned out that she had this issue, he intended to divorce her. Says the Rashbam, Chiddush, all the Rishonim have a problem with the Rashbam, Psak, that if you have a situation that a couple is already nesuim, the fully man and wife, that we learned so extensively in these prokim, that the husband is the Yerush of the wife, if they intended to get divorced, he doesn't get the Yerusha. And since here was clear that he intended to divorce her, he's not entitled to the Yerusha. As I said, many Rishonim, Tosfos and the Rosh, disagree with the Rashbam's Pshat. They say the fact that he intended to divorce her doesn't mean that he doesn't Yarshin her. And the Rosh says a very interesting Pshat. It could be relevant, La'aloch L'maiser, Rechamon L'Tzlan. He says, let's say you have a couple that are nesuim, that are married, but they're intending to get divorced. And before they get divorced, one of them die. Does the other partner sit shiva? It's hard to say you should sit shiva on somebody who you're going to divorce. Obviously, they weren't getting along that well. So how could you sit avelis? And that's what the Gemara is saying, that he wouldn't sit shiva on her because they were going to get divorced. The Chasam Sofer interestingly says that even though the Rosh says la halacha that a couple that's going to get divorced, and if before they actually divorced one of them passed away, the halacha is that they should not sit shiva. Says the Chasam Sofer that was only in the times of the Gemara, before the Chaim de Rabbeinu Gershom, where a husband could divorce his wife without her consent. But nowadays that we have the Chaim de Rabbeinu Gershom, and just because a husband decides to divorce his wife, we know he can't divorce the Bal Karcha. That then no longer applies. And the question could come up that if a couple is about to get divorced, but didn't actually get divorced, and one of them passes away, the din is they should sit shiva. Sivlanus Ma'atim. We learned in the Mishnah if he gave her Sivlanus Ma'atim Shemstam Shemem Beis Aviyah, and he didn't, and he said you can keep it. So she keeps it. Says the Gemara, Yosef of Savin Kaba Rapapa. Yosef Kama. Ben Shemes who? Ben Shemes he. Whether she died. Ben Shemes who or he died. Haduhu Sivloinus. Hadrimach. Haduhu Sivloinus. Haduhu. And the gifts have to be given back. What do we mean that gifts have to be given back? Sivloinus Hadri. The gifts are given back. But Machla Mishta, if it was food, if it was he caused the breakup, she doesn't have to return the food. Hadri by Ihi. What about if she was the cause for the breakup? Hadri afil kish de yarka. She has to give back everything, even a piece of vegetable. Amar Hun Rav Yeshua. However, when we say that she has to give back everything, it's only Shamalhem de Meibos Bazal. When we make the evaluation of what they cost, we evaluate, we have this terminology many places in Shas, at a cheaper rate. What does that mean? At Kam Bazal. What does a cheaper rate mean? At Tilsa. We take off a third. But again, here too, the Rishonim say that this is only in a situation, let's get the story straight, where he gave her food as the gift, and then she decided not to consummate the nesuin. They were paskening, she has to return everything to him. And if the food was eaten, we assess the value of the food. However, we assess it at a discount of a third. And this is the makar. This is the source all over Shas, where the Gemara uses the word bezol. It means at a discount of a third. But that's only if the food is no longer here. If the actual food that he gave her is still here, then she should give back the food. We don't say you keep the food and give him back the value minus a third. Says the Mishnah. This Mishnah, Mitzvah Shem, the Gesugya that we're going to learn, is the Sugya, a concept that we've mentioned many, many times, Baruch Hashem, the sugya of Shchemira. That we know that halacha is divrei Shchemira kiksuvim kumesurim dami, even though to effect a transaction, a kinyan is required, but a Shchemira, just giving direction, is enough. So passing in the Mishnah, when is it considered a matana Shchemira? And says the Mishnah, Shchemira shekosov kol nechosov, and Shchemira wrote over all of his assets, lacherim, to others, v'shayir kaka kalshu, but he didn't give away everything. He kept something for himself. So it's obvious that he's not giving it as a Shchemira, because a Shchemira is giving it away because he thinks he's going to die. He obviously doesn't think he's going to die. If you're going to die, why do you need anything? So then the halacha is matanasa kayemis. But he gave his a gift. The Rishonim make a number of observations. Number one, who is a Shchemira? So the Rambam says a Shchemira is somebody who's so ill that he can't get out of bed. Furthermore, the Mishnah is passing that if he didn't give away everything, the halacha is that the gift is a valid gift. You can't say, Baruch Shem, I had a refuah shleima, but you have to have a kinyan. So what did I say? And we'll speak about this more in the Gemara. For a Shchemira has a special din that you don't need a kinyan. Here it's not working as a Matana Shchemira, because if it was a Matana Shchemira, you can retract. So you have to have a kinyan. Loi Shai Kaka Koshu, but he gave everything away. So it's obvious that why is he giving everything away? Because he thinks he's going to die. So it's specifically a Matana Shchemira. And one of the rules of a Matana Shchemira is that even though normally when I give you a gift, I can't change my mind, here, to Matana Shchemira, we assume it's only given because the person assumes that he doesn't need anything anymore. He's not going to be here. And here, he's Baruch Hashem, had a refuah shleima. The halacha, if he has a refuah shleima and he gets well, and we say, Ei Matanasa Kayamis. Beautiful verse from the Kedus Yitzchak. We all recall the episode in the Torah with Esav and Yaakov and the bracha from Yitzchak. When Yaakov came to Yitzchak instead of Esav and got the bracha from Yitzchak. Then Esav comes in and realizes what happens. And he tells his father, Haloi atzaltali bracha. You still must have some bracha. How did Esav know that Yitzchak still had a bracha? From where did he know that? Says the Kedus Yitzchak, Al Mishnah. The Mishnah says that when somebody gives things away, for the gift to be considered a real gift, that you can't go back on it, you have to keep something for yourself. Because if you give everything away, it's just a Matana Shchemira that is not really a permanent gift. That if you get better, you can get back. So Esav said to Yitzchak, the gift you gave, you really wanted to give a good gift, bracha. So that means you couldn't have given away everything. You must have something left over. Please give that to me. Thank you.